Kia ora mai whānau and welcome to another episode of Best Side Season 4. As always, well not as always, but as I've mentioned numerous times, we took a break through 2022. We've come back with 2023 with a vengeance and it's been awesome. We're in for episode 2 now and this one features multifaceted and multi-talented human and beyond Moana Hancock, who's joining me to have a kōrero about her life's journey so far, exploring living within a cult, perspectives on religion, the reclamation of whakapapa, and how her purpose-driven life now leads her to empower other wahine to carve their path here as well. Exploring the notions that life is almost as much about unlearning things as it is about learning, we challenge one another and call each other in on our values and how events in our lives have led us to where we are today, emphasizing the point that everything you need to be, all you desire is already within you. Having a personal relationship with Mo was always going to make this one pretty deep and interesting. It also had the potential for her to turn the tables on me and interview me about stuff too. But thankfully, I think I got away with quite a bit here. So I was quite lucky that I was definitely sweating coming into this one. But it's fair to say there will definitely be a part two. But part one is still loaded with lots of gems. So grab your notebook, whānau. Check it out. Here's my kōrero with Moana Hancock.
Kia ora, my name is Moana Hancock. I was at Arere, Te Rarere, and I've been on a journey for about the last 10 years roughly. Been diving deep into learning about where I come from, who I am, what I stand for, and also just continually growing into myself as a woman. So I'm constantly learning and evolving, which is really fun and juicy. And then I am a massage therapist. I've been massaging for a number of years. And I just have a studio from home. I also have three daughters. And I own a dairy farm with my husband. And we have 230 cows. So I do most of the rearing on the farm.
Big farmer.
yeah, big whānau. inside the house and outside. So we've got many, many animals. So that's beautiful. And then over time I fell into the coaching world. Which was something that I've never knew about. But absolutely loved it. It was
I'm the glad beginning. You said it. I wasn't sure what to call it, so I'm glad you said that, so we'll use that term.
Yeah. That was the beginning stages of my healing. And yeah, lovely, beautiful foundation. And then from there, I've just continually dived into things that help me on my journey to growing as a woman.
Choice.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. I absolutely loved how for a lot of that kōrero there, you were closing your eyes. So it's like you're just like feeling it out and talking about whatever comes. So that's choice. Yeah. You know, I see people who have everything written down and I see others who, you know, obviously kind of, I don't know, think about it quite hard out, but you just closed your eyes and just went wherever it took you. So that was me. You guys didn't get to see that, but I got to see that here. So take us back, Moana, where did you grow up? Tell me about little Moana.
Oh, my little Moana. Loved that inner child. So I was brought up in Stratford, Whakahurangi, and born and bred in Stratford, actually. I was born at the Stratford Hospital. Ooh. That is no longer here anymore. I come from a long line of very strong wahine toa, and all very much went down the nursing line of work. And
interesting.
And we still have an auntie who practices, and she's been in the nursing field for about 50 years. So very exciting. Born and bred in Stratford, and I've got one brother and two sisters, and my mum and dad in Stratford as well.
Joyce? So tell me about what's like your earliest memory that you remember when you were younger? I know it's a hard one.
Yeah, it is tricky. I was also brought up in, like, I went to in between schools. So I went to Avon School. And then from there I went to Midhurst, and then I turned around and I came back to Avon again. So beautiful memories. Had awesome friends, and Yeah, it depends where you want to go.
No, wherever you want to go.
Yeah. I had a pretty awesome childhood, really beautiful childhood memories for me is going to Nana's. So my Nana resided in Midhurst and all of the family would come together to Nana's. That was the homestead. And then my vivid memory as a child, and it was also exciting, is all of us cousins would gather together, would jump in the car, would wind the windows up, we'd turn the heater up real hot, and all of us cousins would be like sweating.
Oh man, that sounds like a nightmare to me. Just because I'm the world's hottest man. Like I always run hot to
Yeah, and we would go down to Croydon Road. So yeah, I mean if you're from Midhurst, you'll know what I'm talking about. But yeah, we'd go down to Croydon Road. That was the swimming hole. That's where everyone went to go for a dip. And then, yeah, so that's why we wound the windows up. So we'd get really hot, get really sweaty, and then we'd go down to the river and just dive straight in. And, yeah, those are memories that I treasure, is when all of our whānau were together, and especially when we were little, like all of our cousins were together. So, yeah, that's a beautiful memory for me.
Choice. There's a couple of things you've touched on there. So, firstly, the nursing thing. It sounds like healing is sort of in the whakapapa a little bit, eh? Or kaitiaki, looking after people.
Yep, definitely. Yeah, we definitely love to give. We're very, very giving whānau. We're very hearty. Yeah, so we'll always take the shirt off our backs, and we've learnt that from our aunties. Very, very hardworking, and it's very much about making people feel good. I feel that when my aunties walked into a room in the hospital, everyone's eyes just lit up, because... Yeah, they're very hearty, very, I heard they used to get up to a lot of mischief too at the nursing homes, and yeah, they used to have lots of fun. Yeah, so beautiful memories there. But yeah, the people always remember our name, which is Tahu, and they always remember all the sisters that used to work at the hospital. So yeah, they just go above and beyond for people. Yeah,
to make real sure doters.
Yeah. Absolutely.
It makes heaps of sense. It's real funny. It sounds real silly me saying this out loud. Obviously, we've been talking about sitting down together and having a yarn because we've known each other for a while now.
Yeah.
Which is only something I was realizing driving down here today. I was trying to think how long have I known one or four, and it's a few years.
Yeah.
I remember the first time I met you actually was in Opunake, and I know I said this to you recently when we over New Year's and stuff. We were in Opunake. And you were coming down to speak at an event that Calvin and Vanessa were running.
Mm-hmm.
And I even remember the dress that you had on. It's pretty crazy. But it's funny when you speak about your aunties being real doty and kind of just full of beans and they just have a massive vibe. Mm-hmm. I remember getting that from you as well.
Yeah.
I remember when you walked in and I remember, because I think we both spoke. I think I spoke as well. But I remember you speaking. I remember when you walked in and we seen you in the parking lot and you come in and you had this sort of creamy sort of yellowish dress and it had flowers on it. Oh, it sounds real creepy whānau, I know, because I don't know how I remember this stuff. I don't remember nothing.
Yeah.
I'm usually, I'm a typical boy, it's I don't know. But I remember this vividly, and I remember us just having a real good kōrero at that time, and I remember thinking to myself, you got a real sort of auntie vibe about you. And so now you're speaking about your aunties,
mm-hmm.
and now I'm realising, man, this conversation is going to be so interesting today, because I think a lot of these synergies, well, I'm going to understand you a lot better because I'm going to learn about all your whānau and your whakapapa and stuff like that. So I'm looking forward to this. It's going to be pretty crazy. Another thing you mentioned as well is that, you grew up with a lot of cousins and stuff around. So whānau's always been huge in your life?
Massive, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, massive part of our
life. And was it a real te ao Māori sort of upbringing? Were you brought up knowing te ao Māori, or is that something you're kind of learning now, or how does that look?
No. No, we weren't brought up in Te Reo Māori at all. So we were always told that, from my dad and from my mum's dad, same story, really, is their parents used to get strapped if they went to school speaking Māori, and then if they went home, they'd get strapped for speaking English. So it was just none of that here.
So then how do you think that sort of has an ongoing effect for you today?
Yeah, definitely. I'm on a bit of a hikoi with it now, sort of just, just trying to find where I slot in with that, and probably I had a huge identity crisis during my healing, actually, so I'd love to talk more about that. But yeah, like just not knowing where I fit in into, you know, being Māori and also being Pākehā,
just being brought up in like a mixed world, right?
Yeah, pretty much. But you know, when it came to like what do you call it, like tikanga, I guess protocols, right? Like always, from a Māori perspective, you're not always respecting your elders, you're not always taking your shoes off, just being respectful in that way has always come from, you know, our upbringing, in our culture. So we've definitely taken aspects of it, I guess, and then,
I think that's huge as well, like, for people listening. I know that we have a lot of listeners who, you know, they're in the same boat as us, I would say, in that they trying to figure out how to fit in this multicultural, bicultural, however you want to call it, world. I think it's important to remember, for me anyway, and I know there's going to be some people that might disagree, but I think like tikanga is like paramount. Like, you might not have the language and stuff, but I think you're better off knowing tikanga and not having the sharpest te reo language than having the sharpest te reo and not having great tikanga.
Yeah, that's right.
It's not going to get you very far if you try to have it that way around.
Yeah.
So at least you had a real, you had te ao Māori kind of in your in your realm, because you had a lot of tikanga bringing up.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
And how are your girls with that stuff? Are you passing it on?
Yeah, no, they're good.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're really good. They're very shy. Yeah, but no, when it comes to tikanga and stuff like that, no, they've always been very respectful.
Cool.
Yeah.
And is that something you consciously kind of have to work on?
Or I think it just happens, because I had to think about that one, I think it just happens naturally. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. But yeah, I think, you know, I'm still on that journey. I'm still trying to navigate it, but I'm a lot more confident than what I was before. And that's just purely from actually just going for it and going back and finding my roots and heading back and learning about my whakapapa. The moment I did that, and I think the navigation was the hardest part, is actually like, and a lot of people will say, we'll get this, is like, I don't know where to start. Like, I never knew my dad was from Mahia Peninsula. Like, I didn't know that. And I was like, how do you navigate something like that? It was never really communicated, but you can find it.
So let's help those people out that are kind of having the same question. Yeah. What did you do? How did you?
So for me, like, I've been on this massive hikoi walk home to finding myself. It's always been the core of my journey, is finding who I am. And what happened was, I took myself to a beach and I actually wanted to immerse myself into the water and just start, you know, like a kind of like a birthing of something new. Like, I was ready at that particular moment. I was like, I'm just ready to start afresh, to obviously respect everything I've been through as a wahine, but also, starting a new journey. And I had no idea where that would take me, but I just felt like I needed to cleanse my body. And the best way to do that was to connect with Papa Tuanuku and, immerse myself in the water. So I did that, and I didn't know what was going to come out of that, just that I just needed to make that happen. And as I immersed out of the water, out of the ocean, I just burst into tears, and I was like, I want to go home. And at that particular moment, I was like, I don't even know where that is, but something within my body is calling for me to go home. And I just had this vision of all of my tūpuna around me in that moment. That's what brought up so emotions, because a lot of this was blocked from, you know, my upbringing, which I'll go into later. But there was like this blockage of like not being able to visualize my loved ones that had passed. So seeing that was just like brought so much emotions, because like I can be connected. And then the other thing was, like, I'm not alone anymore. I felt like I was in a path all by myself. No one understood me. But in that moment, I was like, I don't have to walk this anymore on my own.
And was it in the actual moment that you knew or you felt alone, or was it like upon reflection you're like, shit, I felt alone? Okay. Yeah. So the moment that was just kind of your normal and you weren't aware that that's what you were feeling, or?
Yeah, like I've always felt alone because I feel like my story is different.
Mm-hmm.
And I just felt like in that moment of immersing out of the water, I was just like, wow, like I'm actually not alone. I can see you. I can feel you.
Yeah.
And so that's where my journey started. So I was like, okay. So Moana went home and then she burst into tears, told her husband, like, yep, this is what I'm doing. I want to go home. Not sure where that is, but I'm going to go on a bit of a hikoi. And then I started Googling a lot. So I jumped online and just started Googling because I'm Ngāti. Well, I always knew myself as Ngāti Kaha Nunu. And that's my dad's side. And that was the venture I wanted to go to. I wanted to check out my dad's whakapapa. And so that's what I started with, Ngāti Kaha Nunu. I knew that
was. So what did you Google?
Ngāti Kaha Nunu.
Yeah, and then checked for what?
Oh, just anything. Like, yeah. It was like, have I got a bit of eye?
Yeah.
Is there any family?
Yeah.
So I jumped into, like, so, you know, on Facebook, they have, like, groups for your iwi. So I was like, oh, I'll jump in there. And then they'd accept me, and I'd be like, are you my family? Like, literally.
Yeah, I can imagine you doing it straight up. Like, people listening probably think that she did not do this.
Yeah.
But you definitely 110% would have.
Yeah.
But it's so cool, like, because, you know, I think it goes to show that a lot of these, dare I say, barriers that do get put in front of us. Look, you know, I know, we all know that there were systematic things that took place to disconnect us from our ancestral lands, to, you know, take away our mana and not us allow to be in our full potential. That was designed by people that obviously didn't want us to flourish because they wanted to do X, Y, Z. But yeah, it's actually never occurred to me. But I understand my own privilege too, that I've always known where I'm from and I grew up with that. But just jumping on Facebook and Google and looking for groups, that's choice. That's like such a simple step to take.
Yeah, it was the only thing I could think of at the time. And then I didn't really get much response from that. And so I just carried on Googling, and then I started to learn about how Ngāti Kaha Nunu was married to Runga Mai Wahine. And Kaha Nunu was Runga Mai Wahine's second husband. And so I started going on that journey, and I learned about the story behind that. And I was like, hi, this is cool. And then I got a little bit stuck. So I got to a stage where I was like, well, I just still don't feel quite connected. So I got quite upset, very frustrated, because I spent hours, like, even like trying to jump on family trees or ancestry. Like, I've even tried to jump in there, but you have to pay. But I was just like, I didn't feel like I was quite ready to commit to a payment, because I was just like, I just want to find my family. And then so I was having a kōrero with my cousin Rawania one day, and she'll be so stoked that I pronounced her name. and we were having a kōrero about, I was like, oh, I've been Googling, and she was like, oi, just stop Googling and go straight to source. Like, you need to go to your family and ask your family. And I'm like, yeah, but I don't know who to ask. So I was like, actually, I'll ask my auntie if I can get some information on it. And that's where it opened a new world. Yeah, so I made contact with my auntie who lived down the South Island. They used to travel. She said, yes, we're from Mahia Peninsula. Yes, we used to go there for holidays, and this is who you need to contact. So I contacted her first cousin, which was Steve at Arere. And then Steve, we jumped on a call, and then he told me to get in contact with Arthur Williams, but his real name is Te Ata Te Rārere.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then that was obviously your whānau right there, right?
Yep.
So tell me about that first kind of catch up.
Yeah, so I was very nervous to begin with, because, you know, of my upbringing and stuff. I could go through that later, but just worried about rejection. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, like, oh, will they like me?
Yeah.
So there was all that, like, sort of feelings going through. But I was very excited at the same time. So I made contact with Arthur. And at the time, he was, like, 83 years old. And all I knew was that anything I need to know, he would have that information. So it took me about a week to warm up to make that phone call. And then the rest is history. So we connected and then we decided to arrange a time to go over, and we stayed there for a few days. And I took my husband because I really wanted him to come on this journey too.
Mm.
And then I took my two of my girls. I've got three girls, but I took two with me, and we just went all the way back to Mahia Peninsula and Opatama. I probably didn't say that right, Opatama. And which is a small little village. And this is like where my whānau comes from that village. Yeah.
Can I ask, the first thing I'm thinking of through this journey, you've got siblings, right? Where are they during this journey that you're going on? Like, were they already in the know with whānau and stuff like that? Were they just not interested, or were they with you on this hiding out? I don't know.
Yeah, so... how do I navigate this one? So, yeah, I know, on a deep level, and a lot of people will know this, is we do have a feeling of something missing.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people will feel like there's just something missing inside of me. That's what I felt when mm-hmm. I went on this hikoi. So I believe that they do feel that they want to go on a journey. They just haven't quite got there yet.
When you went on your one, though, was it like, hey, you guys should come do this too? Or there wasn't any sort of discussion?
Nah, we just did our own little hikoi with that.
Yep.
Yeah, which was quite nice. It was just more intimate. And then, you know, because I'm the oldest daughter from my father, and my father's the oldest son, like the oldest sibling, the oldest child. So
yeah,
so it just felt right in that moment. Yeah, to go on this hikoi on my own.
And yeah. How has this changed things for you? Getting to know that side of you and diving into the whakapapa, what has this changed?
Massive. Like, I've been back twice now, so. So the first time round, Tiata Arthur took us on a journey, and he took us all around Mahia Peninsula and just taught me all about my whakapapa. And my grandfather, his name is Iriapa, and we've always known that his name meant the man that walks on the clouds. And then he sort of taught us about the story behind that and where it comes from, and that there's a rock and that there's a hill. And then we learnt all about Rongomai Wahine, and that we're powerful women that come down her line, which was like, oh, yeah, that's so good to hear. I got to learn more about who I am, where I come from, and the reason why I feel that it's so powerful and I feel so much better is like I connected in so many ways. There were so many things about myself that I couldn't understand why I feel these things, and it all connected back to where I come from.
Mm.
So I was like, even though we don't know each other, we have so much in common and we have so many similarities. We have the same mannerisms. We've even got the same skin. Like, just, yeah, we're family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So back to that, how you were saying before about the missing pieces, right? It sounds like you got a few of those gaps filled in a little bit.
Yeah, like I've never met these people in my life, but as soon as you connect to them, you're like, oh yes, we are so related.
You mentioned as well, like, you grew up feeling quite alone in some spaces.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that journey helped with that?
Yeah, absolutely. Well. I've gone through feeling a lot of rejection from my own family, so that's why I went on this hikoi, and there was definitely some fear that came up because I didn't want to be rejected. But yeah, this opened up a whole new world that I'm like, oh, I've got quite a big family actually, and I can go on that journey whenever I want. I can catch up with family that actually do want to be in my presence. It's just beautiful.
So yeah. Let's, like,
and they really love me.
let's get into that stuff a little bit, yeah, then. Because you mentioned a few times now about, you know, your journey and how that's kind of adversely affected the way that you've executed a few things in life.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess let's get into a bit of that. Tell us about some of the difficulties that you faced when you were younger that have helped you. Well, now upon reflection, they've helped a lot in terms of your growth.
Yeah,
but, sure. Because we've spoken about a lot about that in our own personal time. I guess the things that we were challenges or often struggles within our lives turn out to be kind of the best thing to ever happen to us, sort of, in a way.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Or quite profound in their impact on us. If we didn't go through that, then we wouldn't be who we are today, who we absolutely love.
Yeah, absolutely. So, So my intention, like, of talking about my story is, like, this is my journey. These are just my opinions, and this is just what I've, you know, walked on or hecoyed on. So this is just coming from my lens.
Mm-hmm.
But, and I don't have anything against religion to start with. Like, I actually believe that everybody should have a faith in something. I think that's very important for our growth. And so I just want to make that quite clear. Like, I'm actually totally fine with religion today.
Because that can be the thing too, right? I found, because I've spoken about my experience with different things with religion, and a lot of people, it's quite, because the world's quite polarizing now, you're either for or against. That's kind of what people try and make you think. So I imagine because of the stuff you quoted or about, people will probably assume that, oh, she doesn't like it.
That's it, right. So, yeah.
No, it's awesome that you're kind of laying it out there to say that. That's not the case. You're just speaking to your own experience.
Yeah, that's right. And I've come a long way to get to that conclusion.
Yep.
And I love that because I know that I've grown so much from there, and I'm not going to let something, you know, just override my life. Like, I've accepted what is, and that it's all beautiful. And, yeah, and I... Even now, you know, through my programs or doing one-on-ones with people, you know, I used to always just be about the universe or source, but now we sort of tap into, like, God, if you want to, you know, that's entirely up to you. So, so for me, I was brought up as one of Jehovah's Witnesses from the age of 8, and so I'm the oldest sibling, and so for me... My whole world changed, and it felt like it changed overnight. So one minute I was just a normal, happy, running around child, living a pretty, you know, cool childhood, I guess. You know, definitely have your ups and downs and stuff like that, but overall it was pretty cool. And then in an instant it was flipped upside down. So no more birthdays, no more Christmas, no more Father Christmas, like all of that. All of those traditions that I was brought up with were just gone, like everything, like who I associated with, who were my friends, how I spoke, how I dressed, what I believed in, my thought processes, like everything was taken. And I always remember being 8.
Yeah. I didn't know that it was that instant, like in all the times that we've talked about it. My assumption, and it's obvious now that I reflect, because you never said that it was a progression, but my assumption was that it was a progression. I didn't realise that it was kind of like quite sudden.
Yeah.
How did that happen?
So my mum and dad were on a bit of a journey of their own, like me, I guess, like trying to find themselves, like, you know, surely there's something better for us and our children for the future. I know that was a big thing for them. Like, what is in store for our children and our children's children? You know, there's so much violence and chaos in the world. Like, surely there's something that we can put our faith in, a hope for something better. So that was their hecoy. And, they come across someone who come to the door to share the Bible. And then that's where it all sort of began. Yeah. But for me, I became quite a confused child because I was just like, oh no, what have I done? So I've spent my whole life thinking, what have I done?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I felt very punished, even though they weren't. Like in hindsight now, they weren't trying to punish me. They were just like, we've found a new way. We've got a hope now of something better than where we are now on earth. You know, let's go, let's run for it. So it was just like, get rid of everything that we've ever done in our previous life and let's just like throw ourselves into this religion.
Was there any sort of like final conversation about it or not? Nah, we were doing it?
Like... Yeah, it was a bit uncomfortable, I think, because, you know, like, obviously we're lied to about certain things, you know, like Father Christmas.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think the guilt, there was a lot of guilt around mum having to express that or be, you know, hey, we've been lying to you for X amount of time. So I think she found it really hard to tell me. So they ended up getting someone from the religion to tell me. And that just, like, hurt me so bad. Yeah. And that was probably one event in my life that I've had to do a lot of a lot of healing around.
So, like, what, like, how did that conversation go? I cannot fathom this. So I'm like,
just that we were in the middle of a Bible study. The Bible study closed off, obviously, you know, and then it was like, it was just straight. It was just like, just letting you know that Father Christmas is not real, far and that out. It's all a lie. Yeah. And in that moment, 8 years old, yeah, just like trying to hold back her tears, yeah, and just like, huh, what's just happened? It was, I can still actually feel it, like,
I'm getting a bit teary,
like, quite constricted in my body, of like, oh no, what have I done, like, why are you punishing me? Yeah, so that was that. That's where it all started.
Was there anything else that was mentioned? No. It was just Christmas that was spoken about.
Yeah. Yeah, and then I just ran in. I just remember running into the bedroom and just hugging my dad and just falling in, just completely falling in his lap and just bawling. Yeah, just so confused. Like, yeah, why me? Yeah, and I know you find out eventually about this sort of thing, but yeah, it just came out as a bit of a shock.
Mm.
Yeah, with all of them being gone, like even right down to not that we did Valentine's or anything, but like birthdays were gone. Cause that's all.
So that was a conversation too? Like in that same chat?
Well, it just came as a progression, I guess. It was like, boom, 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 all gone.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it wasn't talked about. It was just something that happened. Like your birthday rolled around and all of a sudden you didn't do anything anymore.
Oh, yeah. Like it just wasn't like sat down as a whānau sort of conversation. Mm. It was just sort of like, okay, we're just not celebrating any of that anymore. Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. So yeah, when you stack all the stuff up that you've been doing for so long, then all of a sudden you're not doing it.
Yeah. And it comes down to, there's so many things, like, you know, national anthem, like, we're singing national anthem, we're not allowed to do that anymore.
Oh.
Camps, like, I went to one camp with my dad, only because he was there, but, you know, wasn't allowed to go to camps anymore. Couldn't play sports, couldn't have my, you know, I could play with my friends at school, but I couldn't associate with them out of school. Like, there's just so many things. Like, your whole world is just...
So could you play sports at school?
Only if it was, like, yeah, during school hours, but I couldn't play netball on a Saturday anymore. I did, but then that wasn't allowed. They had to stop.
And was that just more... like interacting with people outside of school, you weren't allowed.
Yeah, it was classed as bad association. Yeah, if they're not in a religion.
What's bad as? Oh, okay.
Yeah, so if they're not in a religion, you can't associate with them. Yeah, you can only associate with your people. Yeah.
Wow.
And that's it. Yeah. So yeah, that's where my world sort of took a bit of a turn, and you know, I experienced for the first time what a panic attack was. I didn't really know what they were when I was 8. But I used to have, lots of panic attacks, and I just couldn't breathe. And then I've carried that right through my adulthood of not being able to breathe properly. Major anxiety, depression, always trying to prove myself to the world because I don't know what's going to be taken away from me in this moment. You know, so I'm constantly like, is everyone happy? Like, yeah. So it's always a feeling of unsafety in my decisions and in my body. Yeah, I've carried that my whole life, pretty much.
It's super interesting, only because I remember when we went to Tauranga and we were playing that card game.
Yes.
And I think I had to say to you, like, what's a piece of advice that I would offer you? And my piece of advice to you was just back yourself, man. Like, stop hesitating. And you cracked out laughing. And me obviously just saying what the game was saying to play. But now, like, hearing where that comes from, like, I'm not going to say I feel bad, but I'm like, man, if I knew that, I probably wouldn't have said that. Because now I knew where it's come from. But it's probably something you needed to hear, I'm guessing.
Yes. yeah, well, that's why I laughed. Because I was like, yeah, no, on point. Like, I do. I get told that all the time.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's all, just trust yourself, you know. Trust your own decisions, yeah. But when your decisions have been taken away from such a young age, you don't know what's good or bad or what's right or wrong. And I still have to navigate that. Even today, like, you know, when it comes to raising my children or running a business or just, like, interacting with people, like, I've had to put a mask on everywhere I go. So in the religion, I'd be this person. With my parents, I'd be this person. At school, I'd be a different person. And be like, oh, what should I be this time? Like, I could never actually just be myself because I never actually trusted that being myself was okay.
Well, yeah, you sort of never really got permission to, right? Like,
no.
And even that's an interesting thought as I say it. Like, I'm like, fuck, do we need that permission or should we just be attacking it anyway? I don't know. I'm just asking as we think about it. Like, should we just... But, I mean, it's quite easy to say just be yourself, right? We all know how freaking hard it actually is when you've got so many things in the world telling you to be X, Y, Z, be this, that and the other thing.
But I didn't know any different. Like, I thought I was being myself.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know I was wearing a mask until I went on a healing journey.
Yeah.
Then I'm like, oh, I'm actually pretending to be something that they want me to be because that's how my whole life has been, like, you know, with religion and how we behave. It's like, oh, so who do I have to be? Yeah, we never had that opportunity to just be ourselves.
Was there ever a point where it kind of felt like normal and comfortable, or was the whole time kind of this in a, like, I don't know, the word that comes to mind is strangulation, but that might be a bit hardcore, but was there ever a time involved with the religion that it felt normal and it felt all good, or was the whole time were you like in this inner turmoil?
Yeah, probably both. Like I had, I would say it'll be like ebbs and flows. Mm. It comes in ebbs and flows. Like sometimes I'd be like, this is just like, I don't know, I'm so miserable. I don't know why I'm miserable, but I am.
Yeah.
But then there'll be other times where like, oh, well, this is, you know, we've got the hope of a resurrection. We've got a hope of a new world. Like this is, so we're always heading to the future of what's to come. And we just leave all our past behind. So, yeah, there were times where I was like, yeah, I'm just focused on getting to the paradise. I don't want to die. So if you think about it, when you're manipulated and you're controlled, your whole life is based on fear.
Yeah.
And feeling unsafe. And if you step beyond that line of like, oh, you're constantly like, oh, no, have I done something wrong? Like everything is fear-based. Yes, every decision you make is like, is that going to get me into paradise or am I going to go somewhere else?
It's trippy, eh?
Like my whole thinking.
I think you and I have touched on this before, and I know I've definitely spoken about it with other friends. I was speaking about it with a friend on Sunday, actually, and it's kind of like the, like guilt is a weapon. Like it's pretty hearty. Like I think where I'm at now, my own journey, like I kind of don't really register it. I'm human, so there's still times when I feel a little bit guilty, you know, if I haven't texted my mum back or something like that.
Yeah.
But like guilt.
But they're a little bit different.
Yeah, yeah, well, exactly. You know, that's just like I guess that's more in a conflict than like actual guilt. Yeah. But like, yeah, people who or like organisations that use guilt as a weapon, it can really.
It's a thing.
Like I know it's a bit of a buzzword at the moment, the whole gaslighting thing, but I guess that's it's like 101, eh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. The moment you step over the line and go in a different direction, yeah, you're shut down like straight away. Yeah.
So were you quite rebellious in the beginning, or did the rebellion stuff come later?
When I sort of got over the whole, my life's just turned upside down, I just was like, oh, I just want to be like mum and dad and do whatever they do and go to the meetings. We didn't call it church, we called it meetings. And, you know, I just sort of just went with the flow. I just was like, oh, yeah. So I started studying, you know, and just went with it, really, and just did what an 8-year-old, 9-year-old would do. Follow the household. And then it wasn't until I sort of got to about, since I hit high school, that things started to change for me. Yeah, and then it took its turn. But one thing, like, I think it's really important that this topic is talked about because, you know, a lot of people will resonate. But probably one thing I do want to mention that really cut me off from my body, completely disempowered me, was the moment that I was put into a Bible story, into a study situation when I was little, and they taught me about Adam and Eve. And the Adam and Eve that I learned about was like, Eve is the reason for all the destruction in this world.
Wow.
So instantly I thought, women are not good, like they're not a good gender. The reason why this world is the way it is and all of its chaos is because of women. So I was taught that straight away. Yeah. And I'd be like, oh, and then, you know, as you go through your menstrual cycle and all that sort of stuff, I was just like, so is this a punishment? Like, is God punishing us for having a menstrual cycle? Yeah. Yeah. So that's what we were taught.
Oh, you were taught that, yes, it is.
Yes.
Oh wow. Yeah.
So all the labor pains. So you can actually read this in context. Like it's actually in the Bible. Or in this Bible.
Yeah, I was going to say, because I've...
Yeah, the birth pains of a woman. So all of this is the punishment of being a woman for sharing that piece of fruit, that apple, with Adam. So that's where I became very disconnected from my body. I didn't even want to be a woman.
Well, it's like you were... You've almost been taught to be ashamed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course. Yeah, so we were always taught to be submissive to a man. So the man is the head of the household. Deep down, I never registered that. Like, that just used to piss me off.
I'm, like, smirking, only because I'm cracking up, like, because I just know you. And I just know that wouldn't fly. Yeah. So I'm not, like, I'm not trying to take away from how crazy that shit actually is. I'm just smirking because I'm like, well, what, they trying to tell you what?
Yeah, and I think it's really important because people will get me when I start to talk about other things. But, yeah, my journey as a child, I was so disconnected from my body. I hated myself so much. I didn't want to be a woman. Like, I thought how... And I had so much resentment towards Eve, you know, growing up as a child. So that's... Yeah, that had a huge impact of me growing up as a woman. So this is where I came into, like... Yeah, just... I didn't like myself. I had no sense of worthiness. I didn't have any purpose of why I should like myself or even care. You know, people talk about self-care or self-love. I was like, but why? Why should I love myself? We are the reason why this whole world is. Well, I thought.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think that now, but at the time I was like, this is why the world's so screwed up because of her. It's so sad, but when you've had that drummed into you, and I'm telling you, like, we used to have Bible studies every week. We go to the meetings 3 times a week, and then they want you to go out on field service to declare this news to everyone.
And field service is the door knocking.
The door knocking. You know, so you're being drummed in this information daily. You have to have daily practices, you know, like sort of like we do with our journaling.
Yeah, yeah.
We'd have Bible reading and watchtower preparation. And so they're constantly... Watchtower, awake, whatever. They would be constantly, like, over and over and over again, learning that women are submissive, men are the head of the house. Yeah, so when it comes to making decisions, the men has to make the decision. So that never really sat with me, but I never said anything. But I was just like, oh, that feels gross. Like, that just feels yuck.
So then when did the rebellion start to kick in?
Pretty much when I became a teenager. Like, I think you just get to a point where, I don't know, I actually went numb in my body. I just felt like nothing I did was good enough. Yeah, and I
can... Well, because you mentioned those meetings, right? So that's like 4 or 5 times a week, probably more.
Yeah.
And that's happening all the way from when you're 8 until...
Yeah, and it did get sporadic. Like, I wasn't, like, fully going all of those times, but enough to be, obviously, brainwashed.
Yeah.
But I think I just got to an age where I was just like, I don't care. I hate myself that much. I just, like, I don't care. I lost. I was gone. Moana was gone.
Hmm.
Like, that little girl had grown up into a teenager. And I do remember going quite numb in my body, in my sense of anything.
When you say numb, what do you mean?
So just completely, like, I'm just walking, but there's nothing there. Like, I'm just living. I have a heartbeat. But there's no soul, there's no, like, I don't even care if I got hit by a car, you know, like, I was just walking, I was just living, barely, to the point where I was like, I don't care if I get caught, I don't care if, you know, if people take advantage of me, I don't care about my body, I don't care about me as a human being. Like, it was so sad now that I think about it. Yeah.
It sounds like you can't... I mean, obviously, you don't have to get into it if you don't want to, but it sounds like from what you're saying is you got into some quite self-destructive behaviour. Yeah.
So, yes, I did go on a real rebellion journey. lots of jumping out windows, lots of taking off to parties, and lots of lying. You know, and then just trying to, really, I was at the core of it. I was just trying to find myself, but I was just so empty. I didn't know what I believed anymore. I didn't know what was true. I still went out in the world and I did naughty, you know, like, well, classed as what? I thought was naughty, but it wasn't really. It was just being a normal teenager.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say that. Like, how do you differentiate, like being a normal teen to the stuff you were up to?
I wasn't. I was just like everyone else, really. But at that, when you're in a religion, that's like, that is sinful.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, like I just, yeah, I really was just like, I don't even know who I am. I'm just going to just whatever. Yeah. And I did. I allowed my body to be used and I abused it in many ways. I didn't do anything, you know, like apart from cigarettes, but you know, I didn't really get into the drug scene. But yeah, definitely abused myself.
What's your relationship like with alcohol? Or what was it like?
Yeah, it was just like, I think for me, drinking alcohol brought me out of my shell, I guess, because I was quite introverted and just scared of, you know, being too much in my head if I was sober. So yeah, alcohol was good. It just like took me to a different playing field of like, I can express myself and I don't care what's going on. My thoughts aren't overtaking me.
The whole inhibition thing really played in your favour.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So I guess, yeah, I wasn't real excessive, just like any other teenager really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what's your relationship like with alcohol now?
Good. I know that took a bit to pause because I have actually been playing back and forth whether I still want to consume alcohol or not. Mm. Like, so that's the only reason why I paused with that. It's like, do I still want to drink or do I not? Like, what is my process with that? So I'm still processing it, but I feel like I'm getting to a stage where I feel more confident that I don't need to rely on alcohol to, to be accepted in society, that I can actually just enjoy myself just as I am. So, but I still definitely have, you know, a gin every now and then, but I'm not to the point of being excessive, overly excessive, like I know my limit. But yeah, I think I'm on a navigation of like, it's actually okay not to have a drink, like you can just be yourself. Yeah, but I've only just sort of been playing with that.
It's crazy, yeah. Like how much, kind of how hard it is, I guess, at times to not do it. Like,
yeah, I think because it's always been there that you kind of like, oh, when you've been on this journey of growth, you're just like, oh, well, can I just go to that concert and just not have a drink? Or like, I was just like, or should I? So then it's kind of like a pull between like, should I?
Yeah.
Or what do I really want?
Yeah. And I think New Zealand, like, we've got a bit of a problem with that stuff. Yeah. Like, it's so embedded into our culture.
Yeah. That,
you know, celebrate, have a drink. Commiserate, have a drink.
Yeah.
It's like, finish work, have a drink.
Yeah.
Start a new job, have a drink. Like, just anything is associated to have a drink.
Yeah, that's right. Mm. Yeah. So, but what I've been learning is I felt that alcohol was a connection to me being too quiet. So that come from a situation of when I was younger, I used to get bullied for being quiet. Or, oh, she's too boring, don't hang out with her. Because I was so quiet and introverted and shy, I thought that was a bad thing. Like, I grew up thinking, oh, there's something wrong with me again.
I'm interested to know, like, were you quiet, like, from the get-go? Or was this something that happened as a result of the numbing?
No, I was, even when I was little, like little, like right, way before the religion came on board, no, I was very shy.
Okay.
Yeah, I was very timid, very shy, little girl.
I just can't imagine it, so that's why I had to ask.
Yeah. So I always sort of had that in me, that I was a very shy child. But I always used to think there was something wrong because, there's something wrong with me, especially if you get bullied over something like that. But now what I've started to learn, when I do have a drink of alcohol, I'm actually in this journey of just navigating like why it's so hard for me not to have a drink to be social. Like, why can't I just
not have it?
Mm. Yeah. So, and I do know that that's where a lot of it comes from, was when I got bullied. And then I feel that if I just have some alcohol, that just might make me more chattier. But as you know me, and I think this just comes from like feeling safe in each other's presence. I don't sort of let everybody into my world this way.
No.
But when you get to know me, you don't know that I probably am quite chatty.
Yeah, yeah. And we were talking off here, like how I always find it interesting, like close friends and then not so close friends, their observations of me. You know, my close friends will say, you know, it's real funny, people think you're quite out the gate, but they don't realise that a lot of the times it's performative. But, you know, because I've been a radio announcer and stuff like that, or MC, so I've had to, like, kind of force myself out there a bit because that's what I used to get paid to do.
Yeah.
And I'm not a shy guy. I'm not saying that really I'm low-key quiet and I don't go out. Like, I'm a confident dude and I still, you know, am able to, like, hold myself together. But if you're making me choose between going out to the pub on a Saturday and dancing or staying home and just chilling, I'm probably more of the latter.
Mm.
But it's not until you get into the space that we're talking about when you really get to know someone that you kind of realise that.
Yeah, that's right. And I had this experience. I went to, they call it a static dance.
Mm.
And it's run in Taranaki by like Sasha Hope. And I remember going along one night because I actually was like, I really was quite intrigued by it. So I'd love to try that. I don't know why. I just felt a pulling to like, oh, go give this a go. So I just rock up by myself. And that experience like changed me because as I was driving home, like I had a full-blown like emotional release.
On your drive home?
Well, actually during the set at dance. Yeah. And like all these emotions just poured out of me. And I was like, wow, I don't even need alcohol. Like normally you need alcohol when you're dancing, but I was like, I don't need it.
Mm.
Like this is not, like I feel so free and so high on life and air and endorphins that I was like, I don't feel any judgment. I just feel safe. I feel free to express myself in my body. That for the first time I was like, I don't need it. I don't need alcohol to make me feel comfortable.
Because so I just you're having these realizations that as the class was happening.
Yeah. So a static dance was just, the way Sasha took us through the journey, it is about feeling safe in your body and just experiencing the moment however you want to guide yourself through that. Yeah. But that was the most transformational experience when it came to movement, and that's how it sort of got me into my body. And I was like, oh, I can do it, and I don't need alcohol.
So you legit just walked past like a class and this was happening, or how did this class go down?
Well, I've done work with Sasha before. She does theta healing, and then she runs like a static dance. So I saw it on Facebook, and I was like, ooh, what's this about, Sasha? Mm. And I decided to just go along, and experience it. And then I just like burst into tears. And just thought, wow, I felt like if I wanted to be a tree, I could dance like a tree and just blow in the wind. Or if I wanted to be an animal, I could be an animal. I could be anything I wanted in that moment. I think the emotions that brought up for me was my inner child of, you know, that imagination. Like, my imagination was running wild. And I felt so free to explore the room and the space with other people that were doing the same thing as me. And I felt so safe. Yeah, and I felt so protected that I could just, no one's looking at me. No one's judging me. I can just be whoever I want. And there was a moment in my, as a child, I remember Mum had this, she had this beautiful tin box and she had all these beautiful fabrics of her dresses or nightgowns. And she put this in the box for me, just for me. And high heels and jewellery, and it took me back to that moment of where I felt really joyful and free to just be whoever I wanted to be in that moment, and dress up in all this beautiful girly stuff and pretend I was a princess. Yeah, and that's what brought up some emotions during the static dance. I was like, oh, Sir Ross, I was just like so high. And I was so excited on life that I was like, I didn't even need anything.
It's so funny, right? How, like, you can kind of go and do, like, a million workshops and have a million, like, therapy sessions or whatever, and then you just stumble across this one thing that just changes the game.
Yeah. And that brought me to where I am today. So where I went on a journey to dive deeper into aesthetic dance, and I'm about to train with Sasha in May to become an aesthetic dance teacher. And then I've also gone on a journey to learn embodiment, so I've gone quite deep into embodiment work, which Yeah, I can quite a lot on that.
Yep.
And then breathwork. Yeah, so yeah, becoming practitioners in those fields.
We're definitely going to touch on those, but before we do, I think we probably need to sum up for the listeners, like, you mentioned getting involved with the religion and stuff, but we didn't quite get to quote unquote getting out. I don't know what to call it, but you know.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Like you're going through, we were at the stage where you were going through the numbness and having a lot of that go on. So at what point did it kind of get to a point where you're like, this isn't right, this isn't me. I need to not only decide do I want to get out, or but then also I'm sure you would have had to have some help to do that because you can't really do that on your own. Or did you have to do that on your own? I don't know.
So I was 16 when I left home. So I walked out and then moved in with my best friend at the time. So I just rocked up on her doorstep pretty much. We still laugh about this today. So we're still really close. And yeah, I just rocked up on her doorstep and I was like, can I live at your house? And she was like, okay, I'll just ask my mum. And then she asked her mum, she's like, mum, can one live here? And she was like, sure. So yeah, so they're lucky.
And they knew kind of what was going on at home when, like...
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, I guess so. And they just opened their door up and they just like, of course you can come.
Did they know you before,
mm-hmm.
I don't know what to call it, but the change? Like before you were eight?
No, they knew me. That was in high school.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so I met them through high school and we're still best friends and yeah. Yeah, so that's where that all started, and then I stayed with her for about a good year, and then I sort of just went back. So I was sort of having a fight of like, do I go back to the religion, do I go into the world, because I was always taught that the world was evil, and then when you step outside into the world, you're constantly thinking, is it evil?
Yeah, or you're assuming negative intent in everyone, right, because that's what you're taught.
Yeah, always just like something bad's going to happen, you know, like, yeah.
Because they wanted to be your safe place, right?
Yeah. Yeah, so I had this to and fro fight, but I actually got pregnant when I was 19, and that was like a massive change for me. So I'd gone from, you know, just completely being quite a selfish person, I guess, and just not really caring about anybody or anything or even myself, to, oh, I'm pregnant, now what? Yeah, and then that's when I started to pull reins and be like, okay, what do we do from here? So I ended up making a decision pretty much to go back. So I went back to the religion because I knew that it wasn't about me anymore. It was about a little baby. So I actually went back and I started studying and I actually became one of Jehovah's Witnesses. So what I mean by that is I got baptized as one of Jehovah's Witnesses. For out of fear of my child. Because they tell you, if I don't get baptized, then my child doesn't survive. She will die with me. So if you're not baptized, you don't get into the future paradise that they talk about. And if I don't get baptized, then she dies. So I know that now. I didn't know that back then. I just was like so brainwashed. I was like, oh, I'm so scared. I was going to do everything in my power to just, I've got to get baptized. I need to protect my baby. I don't want her to die. Yes, I did it.
And I think that exists like outside of like Jehovah's Witnesses as well. Like I know I've had conversations with people and I'll like, I just, you know me, I'll ask whatever. I'll be like, why did you get baptized? Or, you know, and they were like, I have to ask my mum and dad. So we'll go ask their mum and dad. I'm like, why did you baptize them? And a lot, I've noticed a lot of Māori parents, their answer has been to me, well, none of us really knows what happens when we die. So it's best to be safe than sorry. Like, why not just do it? Like, worst case scenario, we didn't need to do it. Best case scenario, we needed to do it. Mm-hmm. So we do it. And I'm like, man, that's so interesting.
Yeah, they've been controlled it to a certain extent.
Well, there's that whole fear. You know, there's something to fear. Mm-hmm. So just in case, you might as well.
Yeah, that's good. Mm. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So that's where I sort of got locked into the religion.
Mm-hmm.
So I couldn't just easily leave. But probably when I was 23, I decided that I just had enough. Like, I just stood in my moment as a strong woman. And I just thought...
mother now?
Yeah, a mum. And I was still miserable. I still didn't feel okay. And I felt this my whole life. But just something inside of me was like, I have to choose. And I just don't want to do this anymore. And so I left and walked out with my child and I've never been back since. But unfortunately, about a year or so later, I was put into a situation where I was forced to go and tell the elders that I no longer wanted to be one of them. And so I went, and I went and got, they call it disfellowshipping or ostracized or shunning.
So what does that look like?
Yeah, so basically I went to the hall, they sat down.
So it's a ceremony? Like,
no, it's not a ceremony. Oh. It's not a good thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So they open up with a prayer, and then they get the Bible out, throw some scriptures around, and then just want to make sure that I'm making the right decision for me and my child, that I no longer want to be one of Jehovah's Witnesses.
Any sort of convincing go down? Like, do they like, are you sure? Like, you want to stay, eh?
Probably just more like scriptural, like it's very professional.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and very scriptural, and just, you know, getting me to think about, am I right, making the right decision?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and then I just said, no, I don't want to be a part of this religion anymore. And then so I walked out, so it was declared that I was officially disfellowshipped, and I had to say my goodbyes to my family. So with so with disfellowshipping, you have to lose your whole community, so nobody can have any sort of communication or ties with you ever again.
Yeah, well, you're
unless you go back,
what do you call it, like, You mentioned the word, is it bad association or whatever?
Yeah,
you fall into that now. Eh?
Yeah, yeah. I'm a part of they'd call us. I'm a part of Satan's world now.
Mm.
Yeah, until I decide that I'm repentant and sorry, and that I want to go back, that'll be the only time that they'll accept me, and that I can have my own immediate family back. So yeah, I have a beautiful family. Yeah, I've got my siblings and my mum and dad and all of the grandees or my nieces and nephews. We can't associate with each other unless I decide to go back.
Mm.
So there's a consequence. Yeah, there's consequences to love. Yeah, love is conditional. Yeah, unfortunately. Mm. So then from there I became quite suicidal, as you can imagine. Yeah.
To be honest, I would have thought that happened way earlier than that, from everything you're telling me. When you were talking about the numbing, I was going to ask then, were you, you know, thinking about that sort of stuff at that time?
Yeah.
But no, not until a little bit later.
Yeah, I definitely had thoughts. Definitely had thoughts of suicide, but yeah, it just becomes so much stronger and when that happened, because, you know, not having your parents, like losing your community, being kicked out of your village. I mean, they say, you know, normally if you do that to somebody, they die.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they can't survive. Yeah. So that was my pivotal moment of choosing, do I want to stay here or do I want to get some help? Or do I want to stay here or do I want to leave? Yeah. And I chose, I just remember getting on my hands and knees and just praying, please, I don't even know who to pray to right now. Jehovah, God, you know, in universe, whatever. Like, please, I don't know where to go or who to talk to. And, because I had a counsellor, you see, at school, but she never really understood my journey with religious trauma. Mm. So it wasn't her expertise, so she didn't get it. So I felt very unheard with her. So me wanting to reach out and get a counsellor was like, well, no, I don't want that.
Was your school religious school that you had at this time?
No.
Okay.
No. But, so I didn't want a counsellor at that stage because I felt ignored back then. So it was interesting because about a week later, that's where I fell in. I went to a workshop and then I met a coach. And then, yeah, that's where it all began on my journey to healing.
And how are you going with that at the moment? How's it all going?
Yeah, oh, it's you know, like, it's beautiful. Like, yeah. I mean, this is a whole new podcast.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, maybe we should save that for part two.
Yeah,
but
probably,
like, I'm just.
But yeah, I feel like I just. My world's opened up to so many different possibilities that I never knew existed. Like, you know, I'm very naive to the world. Yeah, like, I've only really started to get to know the world a couple of years ago. That's for real. Like,
and that's just down to like being closed off from it and thinking that it's evil. And...
Yeah, because even though I've actually been out of the religion since I was like 23. I'm 42 now, and it's only been the last 2 years.
I was going to say, so you've only been out of there for 5 years.
Yeah.
So about 20, so you
can imagine, like, I've been on a hikoi for about 10 years, but it's taken me 2 years to actually, like, I can choose what I want to learn about.
Mm.
You know, so, like, I'm talking about, like, crystals. I never have a crystal around my presence.
Yeah.
You know, like, oracle cards, you know, all that sort
Saging.
Of stuff. Saging. Like, that's all new to me. Yeah, it's all brand new.
But it's, like, I guess what I want to say the word attracts, but that's probably not the right word. But what calls you into this stuff, do you think? What about this feels like
home? I think to start with, like, I just felt in, like, you just feel it within your body. Like, you just feel, like, a sense of, like, connection to it. I don't know why.
Mm.
I didn't know at the time. Like, I would just, like, first time I bought a crystal, I actually asked. I said, how does this work? I don't know which crystal to get. And they're just like, just go with your feeling. First thing that feels right for you or you feel pulled to, grab that and that's it. So I think that's how it all started. And I was like, oh. So it's about trusting myself and being like, I really love them. I think they're beautiful. I've still got so much to learn about them, but it was the beauty or the pulling towards that energy that sort of got me. Yeah. Didn't really understand why, but... I've just sort of grown my collection over time because I think that's my choice. That's my decision. I get to choose my own way in life. I don't have to, like, I don't want to be scared of this anymore. I used to be so fearful of things like crystals. And I was like, well, is it that scary? I've never had any fear around them.
Yep.
Yeah. So just,
that's because you were told to be fearful of it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So these are all the little modalities that I've sort of just like tapped into. Like, is it scary? Nah, it's not actually. It's really beautiful. So I've been playing a lot over the last couple of years of, you know, what do I get to try that is actually not what I was taught it was, you know, it's not fear based.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So, no, it's been really beautiful. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know what else you want to talk about. I feel like we've gone over quite a bit, but yeah, I mean, maybe we do, like, we come back and do a part two at some time. We talk about kind of where you're at with things now, because I think a lot of people are kind of interested to know, you know, we've heard the background story and kind of the hearty stuff, but
yeah,
it's so interesting to think how you've come from that background and now you're in a space where you're doing, like, massage and... the aesthetic work, the dancing and things like that, because it's so funny, because, like, as your friend, like, I know that's what you do, and that's, like, that's kind of it, but now diving into the whys and kind of the fuck-a-puck of where a lot of this stuff comes from, like, this is blowing my mind, and I can imagine people who listen who know you will probably be feeling the same. People who don't know you will be feeling like, wow, this is pretty profound stuff.
Yeah, and I hope people want more, because I think, you know, once you start to learn, like, why... where I am today, it'll all interlink and make sense.
Yeah,
especially around the feminine power. Like, because I'm holding a workshop or an event on the 25th of Feb, but that's all about reclamation of the feminine power, and this all comes from my story, like where I come from with the story of Adam and Eve, and how I've been able to reclaim my feminine power. So. Yeah, that would be a beautiful podcast for next
time. For sure. Need to talk about the pussy power stuff, because, you know, we girls, like, remember New Year's, the girls are walking around, you know, raising their arms and saying and shit, and I'm cracking up laughing. But I'm, like, and I had to be mindful around, especially the teenagers, because I don't want them to think I was laughing at them.
Mm-hmm.
I was just laughing because I know where they come from and because of discussions that we had. So,
and if people really knew... Why I've gone on this journey, and I use words like pussy power and, you know, woman reclamation or feminine, you know, power and all those sorts of things. If you just knew, listen to the story, then you'll know where my journey's got me to today. And it's all about, you know, like I said to you, I was very numb. I didn't like anything about myself because of that story around women. And that disconnected with that disconnect with Eve and, you know, us as women. And as soon as I found that, as soon as I discovered my power within my womb, within my pussy, I was just like, hallelujah.
Yeah, yeah.
Get me the fuck out of here. I need to, like, scream this from the hilltops, because I was like, I felt so empowered to go, whoa, I have 8,000 nerve endings in my pussy. Like, what? That's, like, beautiful.
And that's, like, I mean, that's the stuff, you know, that I know you and I crack up about, because these are the conversations that we'll have. And, you know, you mentioned before that you've kind of been a bit naive to the world.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it's just really, really cool to witness you come into that. Like, for me, like, I won't lie, sometimes I'm like, this is out the gate. Like, you know? But it's so, like, one, I guess I just really, I really find privilege in that you're comfortable in expressing yourself like that in front of me. Mm-hmm. Especially because, like, I know, you know, the things, obviously we've spoken about it today, the influence or the kind of propaganda that you was pushed on you about men and women. So the fact that you can say that stuff with me around, like, I absolutely love, because I know you can't say that shit in front of everyone. Yeah. And even the shit, like, we DM each other sometimes in the videos we send each other, I'm just like, fuck, this is crack up, man. Like, the type of fish, the conversation. So no, I really, really, I honestly I don't know how else to say it, but I super, super appreciate our relationship. Like, I know we're not, we've never been super close or anything like that, but the last couple of years have been pretty crack up, and just sharing ideas. And especially, like, I talk about this a lot on the podcast, and so for anyone listening still, I know this will resonate with a few of you. Like, I talk all the time about people being able to reclaim who they are as Māori. And the whole reclaiming yourself as mana wahine, obviously I can't really speak into that, but that's beautiful to witness as well, because I know, as a male, all sorts of privilege going around in certain spaces, I'm just not aware of stuff. Like, I'm your typical dumb bloke sometimes, and girls are like, say stuff to me, and I'm like, true, does that happen? And then everyone looks at me, I'm like, okay, it's one of those things that I don't see, because it doesn't happen to me. But I know that, all that shit, and it's amazing to have someone in my life that I can speak to about it with. Because, I have to be careful about how I ask certain questions, because it can come across like, oh, you don't know, you're just a stupid guy. And I get that. I am a stupid guy sometimes. But so it's great. I just really want to thank you for giving me a safe space to be able to ask a lot of those questions and explore some of that stuff.
Yeah, and it's been really beautiful. Like, I really enjoyed this journey with you. I don't know how long this took. But definitely, thank you for joining me on this podcast. Like, I've just sort of, feel more passionate. Just going through my story again and being like, yeah, that's where I came from. Just remembering, this is why you do what you do, Moana, because of where you started. And pussy power all the way, and definitely want to share this with more women to open them, to crack them open, you know, and experience this power within each and every one of us, because it's not about something new. Like, this has always been there, so that's what we mean by reclamation, is like, we're just coming back home because we're fine on the exterior, but it's the internal stuff that, you know, needs to be connected with again. And it's just all about coming back home and taking ownership that, like, none of this is our fault, you know. Like, we didn't have a choice in regards to our culture or, you know, where we've come from in the beginning. But I am so grateful for where I've come from, and I wouldn't change it for the world. Like, even if I could go back, I wouldn't change it.
Which is crazy, right? Yeah. Like, I'm sure, like me, with my journey, I know these days, back then, when I put myself back into, like, 15, 16-year-old Hepa, and I'm, like, crying myself to sleep, like, fuck, why is this happening to me? And then now it's really odd to now reflect on that and go, look, yes, it was shit, but to be honest, bro, it's the best thing that ever happened to you, because now you get to be who you are today.
Yeah, exactly.
Fucking crazy, yeah. It's so weird.
Yeah, we've made this connection, right?
Yeah, hard out. Well, look, that's it. Because of the places that we're at. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah, absolutely.
So before I ask you the last question, the question I ask everyone who comes on the podcast, before I ask you, where can people find you and where can people book to come to your workshops and all that sort of stuff?
Yep, so I've got a website, www.iammoanahancock.com.
Cool.
And then I'm also on Instagram, and the link's in my bio there to get to my website, and the Instagram is iammoanahancock.
choice.
Yeah.
So the last question that I ask everyone that comes on the podcast is, there's someone who's listening right now who is super down in the dumps. They feel like they're at the bottom of the pit, so to speak. What would your advice, bearing in mind that you're not a mental health professional or anything but bearing in mind, you know, you've been on a journey yourself, what would your advice be to that person to help them out of that spot?
Just know that you're not alone. And just recognizing that you have these feelings is your superpower. Like, just knowing that you're not feeling okay. And that knowing that there's support out there for you. And that it's okay to not be okay. And that it's okay to ask for help. Asking for help is not a weakness. It's actually the complete opposite. And just speaking your truth and looking for, you know, the right places to navigate for your healing journey. And if you want to be anything like me, get on your hands and knees and just like put it out to the universe and say, hey, I'm here. I want support. I want to be loved. I want to get help. Yeah. And then just trust that. Yeah. And then just reach out for the support networks that you need, because they will come.
There it is, whānau, another amazing kōrero with another amazing guest, Moana Hancock. Once again, ngā mihi kia koe e hoa. Thank you very much for joining me on that episode. And as I said, I think a lot of you will agree that I probably got away pretty lightly there. Usually when you have friends and stuff coming for this type of kōrero, there's potential for them to turn the tables on you. But I was a bit nervous coming into that one about that, but it was all good. But it's always interesting hearing about people's journeys with their whakapapa reclamation. As we know, there were a lot of things done to a lot of indigenous cultures around the world in terms of colonization and whatnot, of having their reo and therefore a big part of their identity taken away from them. And hearing about how people are going about reclaiming that is always amazing to hear about. In our poll and also in the question section, especially if you're listening on Spotify, make sure you drop in there. We've asked the question, what is your experience with religion? Whether good or bad, whānau, we want to hear about it. And also the poll there too. So make sure you go and check those out, interact with those, let us know what you're thinking, and we will see you next time right here on Best Side. Aku nei.